Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. And that's right, we threatened it. We told you we'd be back on fucking Monday if the Bears kicked ass. And they kicked ass.
We
specifically
got
Caleb Williams kicked ass. That's right. So we're here. We're back.
We are.
We're back
we are
early.
Here. The do you feel the vibes changing, Travis? It's kind of ridiculous that the vibes are changing this much based on a preseason game, which, as we all know, is a glorified scrimmage. But as we have been trying to hit for the last two episodes, the vibe should never have been that fucking rancid to begin with.
Yeah.
Like, it's a necessary counterweight to how over the top the negativity was. You know, it was interesting because Ben Johnson came out of that game and he was talking about Caleb Williams and he said kind of the same thing. He's like, yeah, he's been stacking, you know, the first couple practices of camp, and as we were doing our install, you know, it was a little rough at times, but the last week he's really turned a corner. He's really started stacking good days. It's all step. We just got to keep it going in that direction. And it's like, wow, imagine that, a quarterback learning a brand new fucking system, struggled a little bit during the install period, and as now that he's actually just like calling plays and playing, he looks a lot smoother. And I'm still happy that this fucking game happened, because even, you know, Ben Johnson specifically said that he felt like Caleb had two good practices in a row before the Bills came to town, had a really good, he felt he had a good joint practice against the Bills, and then he had a good preseason game. And like, even the vibes around that joint practice around Caleb were kind of bad, even though
weirdly
like,
bad. Yeah.
Like even the beat writers were like, no, he didn't turn the ball over. And yes, he completed 9 out of 10 passes in 7-on-7. And he completed the majority of his passes in the 11-on-11. And they scored touchdowns in 2 of their 4 red zone possessions. But they didn't score on the 2-minute drill. And they didn't score in 2 of the 4 red zone possessions. And you know, left tackle's a disaster. And then the worst was, I sent you that article by the Sports Illustrated guy, which I do think it's important to note on here. For anybody who doesn't know, maybe anybody just reads Sports Illustrated because you remember what Sports Illustrated has been bought by venture capital. Like everything else in this fucking country, it's been ruined. It's been hollowed out. It's mostly aggregated clickbait shit. There's a handful of quality writers like Albert Breer still there, but for the most part, that is Sports Illustrated is garbage now, and it's just coasting on your ignorance and your comfort with the brand Sports Illustrated. So, like, whenever you read something in Sports Illustrated, you're like, damn, I can't believe that. You probably shouldn't. So, but it was really interesting to me that the guy...
It's like Forbes. It's name only, is it Forbes? Everything else is like this weird, like, you can just write whatever you want up there if you pay him $5, like...
Yeah. Well, and like, the local beats mostly were, you know, they were more... I felt like most of them were like, yeah, Caleb was solid, if not, Kevin Fishbainler said, solid, if not spectacular. Most of the local beats were more concerned about the left tackle situation, which I think we'll get into that in a little bit, but I think that's a legit thing to be a little bit more stressed about right now. But then, like, a few of the national guys that I read that were there, too, like Steve Palazzo and Sam Munson, who used to be a PFF, I think now they're with FanDuel or something. They have a show I listen to a lot. They were at the joint practice, and neither of them had anything negative to say about Caleb, and they praised the Bears' weapons and stuff, but the Sports Illustrated guy, just like his headline was Bears running out of time to fix Caleb Williams.
Yeah. And I think that's what everybody saw was that title.
And the description, and then you start reading the article, and what does he talk about? It's fucking false starts, which he blames on Caleb's cadence. I think that's the first time I've ever seen that, where they were like, yeah, the same two players committed 4 false starts. Nobody else on the offensive line or the rest of the offense did, but the same two players committed 4 false starts, and I think that's got to be Caleb Williams' fault. Like, I think it's loser shit when Bears fans generally are like, the national media is out to get us. Because I said this with Justin Fields, and I said this with Mitch Trubisky, and he had, you know, like, the national media is rarely out to get you guys. They're usually just saying stuff you don't want to hear. But with Caleb Williams, that, especially that article, because I sent you that article, and then Nicholas Moreno of Marquee Sports Network, he wrote, like, an incredibly detailed, like, literally every single play. Like, and it wasn't, he didn't even, like, editorialize. It was just his description of every single play. It was a very dry, very well written, but, like, all it was just stating exactly what happened on every single play Caleb had against the Bills in that joint practice. And I sent you both, and I was like, okay, compare the play-by-play from Nick with this SI article and tell me, like, it, you sound like a tinfoil hat, but like, this is a man who clearly walked into Bears joint practice and come hell or high water, if the Bears offense gave him anything, he was going to say they sucked and it was Caleb Williams' fault.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I mean, we came out of last episode kind of concerned. I had listened back to it a bit, and I was thinking, I was, as I was editing it, and I was like, what the hell am I going to call this episode? And the whole vibe I got was like, oh, we're just nervous, aren't we?
Just
like,
nervous.
Exactly. We're just nervous. So that's what I titled the episode. I was like, we're uncomfortable with how much is riding on a fucking preseason game at this point. Thank God.
And so do well. I think people are probably overreacting positively now to a preseason game? Of course they are. Yeah. But like, I think it's kind of a necessary corrective to just how fucking overwhelmingly over the top negative the vibes were for no real reason. And like we said, it's not even like the reports on Caleb have been like, yeah, Caleb Williams threw another 5 interceptions today, or Caleb Williams just isn't picking this up. It's just, you know, there have been some good days and some days where they're like, yeah, he was kind of up and down, he missed a couple throws, there were some false starts, like that was what the drive, but everyone was just so negative and so ready to pounce. So I'm happy for Caleb that he came out looking sharp. And I think if you can take anything from Caleb in the preseason is a good thing. I went back and I looked. So let's just compare preseason only. Let's not talk about regular season Caleb Williams last year. But preseason Caleb last year, he completed only 50% of his passes, and he had a time to throw last preseason of 3.68 seconds. Last night, he completed 60%, although there was a drop in there. There was a throwaway, so his adjusted completion percentage per PFF was 77%. So he was on target for almost 80% of his passes. And his time to throw was only 2.6 seconds flat. So what that tells you is, even last year in the preseason, and we were celebrating, you know, he had that crazy spin off platform throw to Rome that was exciting. And he had that crazy long touchdown run that was exciting. But the structure of the offense was already broken last preseason. I remember you and I being like, this Waldron personnel usage seems really strange. There's a lot of Gerald Everett. There's a lot of ISO routes. But maybe he's just saving the good stuff for the games that matter?
Yep. I was going to say that there are, like, we talk about preseason not mattering, but some of those pieces do tend to carry over into the regular season.
Yeah, and
not usually the ones that we're looking at, but yeah, that was definitely one of them.
The lack of creativity, the static offense from Waldron, and then just how Caleb was not ever hitting his back foot and just ripping it to his first read. He was always, and that's the big question with Caleb, obviously, in this offense, or at least it is for me, it's just, if Caleb can trust it and let it rip when it's there, he's going to be great in this offense. Because with Ben Johnson, it's going to be there more often than not. He's going to put you in good situations. All you have to do is autopilot this thing the way Goff did it 80% of the time. And then the other 20% of the time, that's where we need you to do a little bit of Caleb Williams magic. Whereas last year, you know, it was mostly like, if you're lucky, about 40% of the time the play is going to work as called. And then the other 60% is Caleb go be Superman, which is kind of what it was his last year at USC as well. And I think Caleb can execute in structure and can execute well when the play is there. It's just that when it's not there, we know he's going to go into the hero ball, and we know, especially in year one, those kind of guys, they really struggle to find that balance, and they really struggle to be like, oh shit, those defensive ends are fast. And so last night was a step in the right direction because Caleb hit his back foot. Every single ball I felt like was out on time.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think the best way to illustrate that difference is Caleb's footwork has finally been tied to a route within the tree. And we talked about this back with Getsy, where we were like, oh shit. Like he just came out and said, no, of course he can do whatever he wants with his feet and, you know, just hit the receiver when you feel like it. And then we thought, okay, obviously the next guy is going to fix that, right? Waldron isn't going to do that. And then Waldron didn't tie his quarterback's footwork to a route. And finally, we saw it here, and he had an issue with it on one particular play, with which we'll get to. But pretty much every other play was clearly his footwork was tied to the route tree. He was bouncing between his reads exactly like he should have. And I think most impressively, the part that got me hardest of all was he was instantly, you know, looking at the right part of the field, recognizing what he needed to recognize, and he wasn't second-guessing himself. He wasn't thinking, oh, is there going to be a bigger play open here? Should I wait a little bit for something nicer? He was just like, boom, okay, this linebacker went low, I'm going high. Okay, this safety went outside, I'm going to go up the seam to Cole. And it was instant from brain to arm. And last year, that was not something Caleb was doing. Maybe it wasn't something he was capable of doing, but it definitely wasn't something he was coached to do. And you can see all the hard work that Ben has put in here over training camp so far. So that was just, that was huge.
Yeah, I mean, everything we have heard about Ben Johnson is like, you know, there's this perception of him as this whiteboard. You know, like when Bears fans were debating whether, you know, do you get Ben Johnson or do you get Mike Vrabel, you know, it kind of painted Ben Johnson in this unflattering light, kind of as a Mark Trestman, you know, a guy who lives on the whiteboard and spends his time daydreaming up new plays, but doesn't really understand how to reach the players. But the truth is, and from everything we've heard about Ben Johnson, especially, you know, Allen Robinson was a guy who played for Ben in Detroit and has been talking on a lot about how good he thinks Ben will be for Caleb. And he's just like, this is not the guy. Like, before you even get into the plays, it will always be about the fundamentals and the footwork first. He will keep Caleb on task when it comes to his footwork, and he will stay on the wide receivers about lining up correctly and on about their blocking assignments. We'll talk about that with Luther Burden here in a little bit. But, like, he's truly a football coach first and foremost. Like, he focuses on the fundamentals, the footwork, all of that. And then, yeah, on top of that, he seems to be quite innovative and quite a schematic genius when it comes to the actual X's and O's, but all of that comes secondary to drilling the details and doing that all right. And that's something that, you know, I think Shane Waldron, like, not to defend the guy, I don't think Shane Waldron is probably as bad as he looked last year necessarily, but I do think he is kind of what people said falsely portrayed Ben as when they were making that false dichotomy with Vrabel, you know, because Vrabel's a leader of men. Like, I think Waldron is kind of a whiteboard guy. He likes to draw up plays, he likes to do the X's and O's, but he's not so much on coaching the details, he's not so much on the personal relationships or anything like that. I think when he was in Seattle, he had the benefit of being under Pete Carroll, who's one of the truly great CEO head coaches in the history of the game. And he also had, for 1 year there, the most successful year he had in Seattle, he also had Dave Canales with him, who has proven to be, you know, a pretty good coach in Carolina, at least in terms of, you know, the rah-rah stuff. And I think Ben is a good, he's kind of the best of both worlds there. And you see that with, you know, not just how good the play designs were, but just how crisp Caleb's footwork was and how quickly he was getting rid of the ball and executing on schedule.
Yeah, and I mean, speaking of the play designs, you could see kind of a mix, like a gradient where we moved from, you know, the earlier plays, which Caleb managed to have great success with, pretty vanilla plays, but they were plays that were designed to get a response out of Caleb, to see if he's kind of graduated from what Ben was teaching him. I guess the last couple throws of that first drive, and then the few throws we had on that second drive, those felt a lot more like Ben Johnson plays, with like multiple options depending on what the defensive read is going to be. Everybody has a role, and sometimes your role changes depending on the look, like that type of shit. So like it almost felt like he saw, okay, well, Caleb's got it. Like he's got the basics down here through that first drive.
Well,
and
you saw
him kind of moved on, like, let's do a couple of these before we quit.
Yeah, he mixed in, like, you saw some under center PA, like the first play was under center PA action, which Caleb didn't get a whole lot of last year. And then you also saw, you know, the incompletion to Hankins was a straight drop back from under center, which that is kind of, you know, it's funny, I was listening to JT O'Sullivan and he was, did a breakdown of Caleb and he was talking about that play and he's like, I don't understand why coach, he's like, I hate seven step under center. I don't know why coaches are still doing that in 2025. And it's funny that, you know, I like JT a lot, but this is where I will disagree with him. The reason coaches are doing that in 2025, they're not still doing it. They're bringing it back because defenses, you know, it's funny, 2007, the 2007 Patriots were the first team in NFL history that took more than 50% of their snaps from the shotgun. And now you have every offense pretty much runs mostly from the shotgun. And so the cheat code that the Kyle Shanahans and stuff of the world and the McVays of the world found was, you know, under center play action. But now we're seeing defenses develop some counters to that under center play action. And so what you found Kyle Shanahan doing now, Mike McDaniel's doing a bit of it, Sean McVay's doing a bit of it, is just old school Bill Walsh, Mike Martz style under center straight drop back game with routes tied to 5-step, 7-step drops. Quarterback doesn't have to turn his back to the defense. And those were some of the highest EPA per play passing plays last year that were those straight drop back under center plays. And so that's why you see Ben. I think that particular play was a very basic concept. I don't think that's necessarily the best of the straight drop back under center playbook that he's got in store, but I, you know, it's good to see. You want to see Caleb get comfortable taking those old school dropbacks and tying his feet to the routes, because if you can go under center and you don't have to turn your back to the defense, you have that whole passing arsenal available to you under center, but you can give that look of being under center and threatening them with the run game. Like, that is a huge advantage now in today's, even though that was the way that it used to be done for 50 years. That's a huge advantage now in today's NFL for the way defenses have been built to go light and to spread out to stop these shotgun spread offenses. So I was excited to see him get a rep of that in there too.
Yeah, definitely stuck out even during the broadcast. Like, well, that's not something, you know, you're going to usually see from the Bears, you're going to see from a modern NFL offense. It also showed JT did a great job breaking it down, but it also showed what happens when, you know, your footwork is tied to a route and then, you know, you're kind of off. Like, his 7-step drop was just way too early for Colston Loveland. He's looking at his first read and he's not there. He goes off of him too quick because that just kind of throws everything out of whack. And all of a sudden you're checking down to your running back and he's getting hit. And it's just like, this play didn't really work, all because, you know, you're on a 7-step drop and Colson's not going to be there until you're at step 9 or something. And
yeah, it's going to take repetition. It's going to take work. I'm just glad that that's something that they are working on, because that is like, well, and the thing is that Caleb has all the talent in the world. And I think you don't want him to be just like a guy who's purely a product of the play action, the wide zone, like a Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, like those kind of guys that you are, like, you have to gimmick the offense to make them work. Caleb, I think, you know, it's going to take time, and this year there should be a lot of training wheels because last year he didn't have any, but like, he's a guy that I think eventually the whole menu should be available to him, and he can use the whole. He should be able to use the whole part of the whole area of the field too. So I'm just glad to see them working on that stuff with him. Like, that is like, that's how you, and again, that goes to the Bears having like an actual innovator at head coach at, you know, a modern offensive mind, because like I said, that is, it's retro, but that's also the future of the game now, is to cycle back and get some of that stuff back in there. Plus Ben Johnson, you know, he's got some Adam Gase in his history. He's got some Mike Martz, some Al Saunders. And Mike Martz hated the fucking shotgun. The whole greatest show on turf, everything was tied to under-centered 5- and 7-step dropbacks. So you'll see a little bit of that sprinkled in. I don't think that'll ever be the majority of the passing plays or anything, but if you can show defenses that you can execute those concepts, that then makes that does make your run game and your under-center play action game more effective, because it makes those safeties think twice about coming down into the box. And it also, you know, it might, if you have that under center drop back game, you know, that might mean that the linebackers sell out a little harder on the play fake on when you do go under center PA. So I think it's good to see them working all of that different stuff. And then you saw some straight drop back stuff from the gun. You did see some play action from the gun. You saw some under center PA. It was just a lot of good stuff, even as vanilla as it was.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we talked about this a bit last week, but I was kind of flummoxed more with how everybody was so negative on Caleb, because it seemed like everybody had forgot that we had hired Ben Johnson and how good Ben Johnson had been. And what we saw, you know, in this game, I mean, you just talked about, you know, with Caleb, like, obviously a guy with this much talent, this is a guy who time is going to fix, essentially. Like, my greatest nightmare for this is not like, oh, Caleb goes out there and he's Jamarcus Russell or he's Zach Wilson, right? That's just not going to happen, especially not with Ben Johnson running the offense. My greater nightmare would be that this is a Kyle Shanahan situation where you've kind of capped yourself out with your quarterback. You're so good on offense that you get a quarterback who's good but not great, and suddenly you're tied down to that. And, you know, you could say it's the same thing you had going with Jared Goff in Detroit, even though I like Goff a little bit more than you. That would be my fear. But the beautiful thing about Caleb, as opposed to a Jared Goff or a Brock Purdy, is time actually will just keep leveling Caleb up. Caleb has all of the talent in the world. There is nothing Caleb Williams can't do. Like, as a prospect, he is just going to keep developing. So even if Ben Johnson just has to sink in, you know, weeks and seasons of this into Caleb, and we're like, oh, is he good enough for, you know, this season and next season? We're like, oh, is he ever going to hit that ceiling? With Caleb, he is eventually going to hit that ceiling if he just works with him and works with him.
Yeah, I mean, the only question with Caleb is, you know, like, can he do the simple things? Can he execute on time in this offense when it's there? And obviously, we won't know the real answer to the regular season, but this was certainly an extremely encouraging step in the right direction.
Huge change.
Because,
from
again,
last year.
Ben Johnson, if you just throw to your first read in a Ben Johnson offense, you're probably, I mean, this is something that I've called it performative processing that Tua does in Mike McDaniel's offense, where he ain't reading shit out. He's just trusting that Mike McDaniel and Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill are going to be right and letting it rip. If Caleb just trusts Ben Johnson's first read, he's going to be right about 75% of the time. And then, like I said, you just got to have that little, you got to have the Caleb Williams juice for just, you know, a handful of plays a game instead of almost every drop back. And I think the combination there is really special. Potentially, you just needed to see that, like, Caleb can execute the play as called when it's there. And a huge step in that right direction.
Ooh, like, some play, I mean, even the vanilla plays in this one. Like, when's the last time we saw a Bears team run four verts, Kyle? Like, one of the more basic plays that you
that
can
tight
run.
End seam. Yeah.
And then just drill the tight end seam.
Yeah, and there was there was some late safety rotation on that play. And they showed middle of field closed originally, and they rotated down late to show middle of field open. Caleb saw it immediately and ripped it to commit. Like, no hesitation.
Caleb's eyes perfect in the exact right spot. Yeah. He's looking at the right place, and he's just watching DeMar Hamlin on that play, like, which way are you going to take your first step? He goes outside, and he just rips it to Kmet.
Yeah, and then the anticipation on the out route to DJ Moore, all the things you really wanted to see were present last night. Obviously, no, it doesn't matter because it's the preseason. You got to see him do it in the regular season, but, like, there's nothing that you could have wanted to that you needed to see from Caleb Williams that you didn't see in that game as a first step, because, like, all the things that you wanted to see him clean up, the footwork, the accuracy, the anticipation, playing on time, it was all there.
Yeah, last year it was kind of a matter of, ooh, is this guy open right now that I'm going to throw the ball? Right. In this game, I mean, that throw, the second throw to Loveland, where he's not even looking at Loveland. He gets the ball and he stares down the Bills linebacker and he's like, all right, buddy, make your choice. And the second, you know, he plants and he decides he's going to collapse on Loveland, he goes, all right, we're going over the top.
Yeah, like, the throw to Loveland was probably my favorite of the night, like, just in terms of the read and then layering it over the linebacker. Good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it was good to see, like, the faith on that throw to Oz that ended up being a touchdown. That is a scary-looking pass from the hole, man.
You know why
that is horrifying.
You know why he has faith in Oz, Travis?
I don't.
Because Olamide Zaccheaus is a ball player, you non-ball knower. Folks, you can go back and listen to this motherfucker compare the goddamn Wizard of Oz to Equanimeous St. Brown.
Are you proclaiming victory on this because of a single catch in week 2 of the preseason right now?
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
100%. And also because, I mean, by every report, Oz, by every report, Oz has been a standout in camp. He was huge. I mean, apparently in the joint practice against the Bills ones, he did exactly what he did in the game. He caught a similar slant route, skinny post, and took it straight to the end zone. And he's been throughout camp, he's been a trusted target of Caleb. He's a safety blanket for Caleb. To be honest, do I think Olamide Zaccheaus is going to have like 800 yards this year? No, but he's always been a quality, like 500, 600 yard a year guy on much worse passing offenses generally. And so I didn't know why you compared him to Equanimeous St. Brown. I thought he blocks. He's a good yak guy. I'm excited to see, you know, he's absolutely the least exciting receiving option in this offense, but that tells you how good the receiving options are, because he's a quality slot guy. He really is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm comparing him to Equanimeous St. Brown because I'm hoping that's going to be his role in this offense. Like, if you're going to Olamide Zaccheaus instead of Loveland, Komet, the running back, DJ Moore, Roma Dunze, or Luther Burden, don't things happen? Like, somebody probably got hurt, I would think, or I guess Burden is just, you know, not broken into that role yet. But speaking of Burden, if we can move on from the first team.
Well, I'm not ready to move on.
Well, we can talk about tackle in a little bit, but Luther Burden had a fantastic game.
I don't know if I'm ready to move on for the first team yet, because I do want to talk about Colston Lovell in a little bit.
Oh, okay.
He had two catches.
He did.
You got like a Werther's original in your mouth right now, son?
I'm eating some sweet tarts, Kyle.
Okay, sweet tarts. Okay, yeah. God damn.
Listen, enjoy the sweetness, Kyle. Well, I'm sorry. What did you want to say about Colston Lovely, Kyle?
God damn it!
He caught a couple balls. Cole Kmet caught a ball.
You old ass man. God damn it. No, Loveland, I mean, great, first play, nothing, you know, just he's he's sneaking in the flat, but, like, not anything super crazy, but good hands, fought for, I think, an extra 3 yards after the initial contact, set up a second and one, and then, yeah, the route running on, you know, the night, and the concentration, you know, that was, Caleb had to put that one up kind of high to layer it over the linebacker. Colston went up with his hands, caught it, you know, not as easy of a catch as I think Colston made it look, but he's a quality. That's what happens when you have a quality receiving tight end. And yeah, I'm very excited to see what the Bears look like in 12 personnel this year, especially with the under center play action.
Yeah. Whew, they got Greg Olsen hot, man. He was ready for that shit. He was like, tight ends. Also, we should probably shout out the Fox broadcast, because they did not say one negative word about Caleb the entire night. They pumped up Ben Johnson, and I think that helped.
It's very annoying that because Tom Brady's Tom Brady, he bumped Greg Olsen out of the number one spot for Fox, because Greg Olsen is very good. In my opinion, he is probably the best color guy or former player analyst that the Fox booth has had. Maybe since Aikman in his prime, Olsen's fantastic. And so it really bummed that he got bumped down the depth chart because of Tom Brady. The one thing I will say about Greg Olsen is he's got that like Ron Burgundy swoop to his hair. He's got like 70s newscaster hair to try to hide that, like, under the swoop, his hairline is receding very badly. So, you know, I don't know that that's, I don't know that you're fooling people the way you maybe think you are, Greg.
Eventually, you just got to give it up, G-Reg. All right, be like me. Just buzz it all off.
Be bald like Travis.
Damn right.
Okay, so one last thing with the first string. Do we want to talk about the left tackle battle?
We might as well. I already shouted out Luther Burden.
We'll talk about Luther Burden some more.
All right.
But
I didn't think Braxton looked bad.
I thought Braxton looked okay. The only really bad rep was on the out route to DJ Moore. If you watch that replay, Braxton gets beat pretty quick. Fortunately, Caleb got the ball, knew he was hot, got the ball out incredibly fast. But that was an ugly rep for Braxton. And it sounds like in the joint practice on Friday against the Bills, starting defensive line Braxton did not have a good day.
Yeah.
I'm hoping. I mean, it's just because the guy's not 100%. He's just not. I'm hoping that in the time we have until week one, he can sort of round into something akin to game shape. If it were me, now Theo Benedict, is it Benedict?
Benedict. Benedict. Is what they said on Hard Knocks last year.
Benedict has looked competent enough when he's been forced to play. Not that I would really consider giving him the actual left tackle job for the season to start, but I think I would be where I'm at right now is I'm like, okay, I think Benedict can play in the last preseason game if you want. Actually, you're going to send the starters out for a little bit. It sounds like they are for just a little bit, going to send them back out there. I think Benedict can take those reps without getting Caleb killed. Why don't you shut Braxton Jones down now in terms of taking reps and stuff, and just let the dude focus on building up his fucking calves. Like, let him rehab for the almost month that we have left before the game is actually played, because I think the guy's problem right now is just that he's not 100%. So let him focus on getting his body right over trying to fight for his job.
My guess is the fighting for your job kind of thing is also coming a lot from Braxton's side of things. And what I mean by that is I bet when Braxton was playing at Southern Utah, he never imagined that a season or a year of his life would be as impactful as this one is about to be for him.
Yeah. I mean, seeing what left tackles money, certainly,
right.
On,
this was not on his radar 5 years ago. And he has a shot this season, if he plays well, of, you know, making generational wealth for his family. Like, I don't think he is going to cotton to the idea of sitting down for anybody else and giving them a shot to take the job. It doesn't seem like there's a chance of re-injury. It seems like, you know, kind of as you say, he needs his strength back. Like, he's just not there yet. He's just, I guess he wasn't able to move very much. And paradoxically,
yeah, he just wasn't able to build up the mass in his calves. Yeah.
Yeah. Paradoxically, with offensive linemen, when they can't move, they start to lose weight.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
They're not supposed to be that big.
Yeah, right? It's a lot of work to maintain that mass, no doubt.
So he just has to build that back up. He has to get back into game shape. He's been caught flat-footed too many times. You know, he needs to get back into it. I hope that's all it is, because obviously we're Braxton Jones lovers here. I would love to see him succeed. I would love to see him get paid, even if it's not with the Bears, and he's somewhere else next year, being a competent starting left tackle in the league. But yeah, it seems to be a bit of a situation. I think it may be more overblown because it got so bad apparently during that Bills joint practice. Like, there was a lot of doom and gloom from the local guys. They were like, this is fucked. We do not have a left tackle. We had reports coming out like, is it possible that we could just go get a left tackle? Like, there's some guys out there. Do we got some old left tackles who just retired we could bring in? Like, I don't think we're in that type of situation, but it does kind of look like Braxton won't be 100% until, you know, maybe a month into the season at this point, which is pretty unfortunate because we're playing the Vikings first.
Yeah, on the positive side, the Bears, I think the other four offensive linemen that they have are quite solid and will be solid, and I think they get a lot of help from these coaches in this scheme. And I think, you know, as we talked about all last year, it's easier to help a tackle who is struggling than to help an interior offensive line that's struggling. So if we have an interior offensive line that can hold their one-on-ones, you know, you can have Cole Kmet help out Braxton Jones plenty. You can have the backs help out Braxton Jones. So I think you can scheme around that a bit. And plus, you can always roll Caleb out to his right as it is. So, yeah, I don't think it's red alert there, but if I have any unease about the offense right now, it's not the quarterback. It's the left tackle position, certainly.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like I said last week, like I'm actually not really worried about the offense at this point. I think there's a baseline competency we're going to get from this offense anytime you have Ben Johnson leading it. Yeah. But yeah, there are always those matchups. Like, you have one weakness and then the whole game unravels, and left tackle is one of those spots. So get well soon, Braxton. They're going back into the bunker for the next 3 weeks. We aren't going to hear too much, and You hope and he comes out.
You know what?
Strong.
I think I'm fucking looking forward to that too. I think we could all do with a little less breathless play-by-play of training camp practices for the Bears. Like, let them. Hopefully, if the starters are going to play in the preseason game against the Chiefs Friday, and it sounds like they are a little bit, let hopefully we get one more good drive out of Caleb, or maybe you just have Caleb hand the ball off 3 times. That's fine with me too, and just roll with the good vibes from this game still. The other thing I had to say about the sort of first string is Luke Newman got the start in place of Joe Tooney, who, got the veteran privilege of not having to play in the preseason. And I thought through both preseason games so far, Luke Newman has looked pretty solid at guard, and he's done some at center too.
Yeah, no, he did look good. I mean, Joe Tooney, obviously, like, I thought we got rid of Nate Davis, and here he is again, just popping in.
Sally refusing to practice. Yeah, that's right. Damn it. Yeah. No, I mean, Joe Tooney obviously doesn't have anything to prove in the preseason, and you gotta save what bullets are left in that chamber. And Newman, obviously, barring an injury, does not have a path to starting right now, but it's kind of nice to see the Bears have maybe found a quality interior O-line depth piece. And I know it still hurts Ryan Poles that he had to draft, like a 22-year-old average athlete just because he started like 50 games at a Big Ten school and actually has technique and polish, because we all know he would rather have drafted like a transfer from Moldova who's played 6 games and is an experienced shot putter, but has a RAS score of like 13. Because speaking of, Kieran Amagaji might not even make the fucking roster. So it I know it hurt Ryan Poles, but sometimes you just have to draft the guys that play football instead of drafting crazy athletes who look like they've never seen the game before.
It's funny because that was like one of our favorite draft picks. It's like, oh my God, he just did the thing. Like, he just picked a quality guard because they're so undervalued.
Right.
Like,
we were just
keep it up, Ryan. Yeah, do it once a year. Okay.
Yeah. That's all you got to do. Yeah. The Packers love to draft mid-round guards with crazy names like Zach Tom and watch them just turn into quality offensive linemen. So he's so white, he's got 2 first names.
Crazy names like Zach Tom. What are you doing with 2 definitely first names, definitely not last names?
Zach Tom.
Zach Tom.
God damn, that's like the name I give the cops when I'm trying to lie. My name's Zach Tom.
Anyways. Which is it, son? It's both.
Zach Tom. Anyways, so now we're on to the second team. And Travis, talk about Luther Burden.
Luther Burden, like, looking great. Catch a passes from Tyson Bagent, who also looked fantastic.
Burden,
I mean, look. Anytime Luther Burden is going up against the second and third string on a team, he should smoke their asses, and boy, did he.
Yeah, I mean, he's looked unguardable in 2 games against backups, which, I mean, a guy of his talent absolutely should, but it's not just that he's just winning with speed out there. The most important thing is, as lots of people have pointed out, is that Burden blocked his ass off, especially on those 2 rushing touchdowns. You saw him motion down into the box and dig out the safety. And, Ben Johnson has preached. I felt was interesting, too. I felt like Burden's 2 biggest targets of the game came on the Bears' next offensive plays after those touchdowns. And so I feel like Johnson was almost very intentional about sending that message. Like, yeah, kid, I saw your block. Now here's the ball. And that's, just get the buy-in. And again, I think, I am rooting for DJ Moore. I want him to be the guy that we saw in 2023. I don't necessarily blame him for as frustrated as he got last year. But at the same time, when that draft pick was made, we said, I think this kind of sends a message to DJ Moore about how much tolerance this staff is going to have for those kind of shenanigans again this year. And I think Luther Burden blocking his ass off sends a message to DJ Moore too. Like, this is the kind of effort that you're going to have to put in too, buddy, or your targets are going to go into the kid.
Yeah. It's nice when watching all this fucking film about the draft pays off. So when I can say something months ago about, like, hey, that Luther Burden guy, like, fucking loves to block people. I don't know if you know about this. And then you see it in the preseason where he's like, I just want to fucking hit somebody under the chin. That's nice. It's nice to see that Greg Olson, again, got super horny about it. He's just like, that is going to do more for you getting balls and getting in with the locker room and like making friends than anything else that you were going to do as a wide receiver. If you're going to go in there and just obliterate poor DeMar Hamlin, you know, just, you know, maybe not DeMar, maybe anybody else, Luther. All right. Hit a different member of the secondary. But yeah, just wonderful blocking. Again, he looks like a cheat code against the second team, which he should. You know, we always say this, like, we're going to, you know, talk about with Austin Booker again. Booker had a couple plays in there where it just looked like it was unfair. You know, like he was superhuman because he was running past the second string. But Burden was the same way. Just made it look unfair out there. And yeah, I mean, that's what you want to see. That's what you expect to see out of a guy you think is going to be a star. But
yeah, I mean, the question,
you
got to
do
about,
it.
Well, the questions about Burden, obviously, were effort and attitude. And it seems like pretty quickly Antoine Randall and Ben Johnson have straightened that out really fast. And again, this goes back to the point that I was trying to make all the way when the Bears passed on George Pickens and stuff, is that, like, you know, when you had Matt Eberflus, who was making this big fucking deal about what a great leader of men he was and how they believed in their culture, but then they, other than fucking Chase Claypool and Nate Davis, they basically avoided every single character guy. Like, if they truly believed in themselves that much, I can't help but think Jalen Carter would be a Bear.
Yeah.
But they didn't believe it. They didn't believe their own lies about their ability to coach these guys up, and we consistently saw them fail to get guys to rise up and meet the standard. And then you see in Ben Johnson and Antoine Randall, oh, they've already got Luther Burden busting his ass off, cracking blocks in a preseason game. So, like, if you are a coach that believes in your ability to coach, you should be like, holy shit, Luther Burden fell to pick 39. I'm going to make the league fucking regret that.
It is nice to hear that Ben Johnson was just as irate as I was, that he had fallen that far and was like, if you don't pick this guy, I'm going to throw a fit and I'm going to punch you in the mouth. Like this is the premier athlete in this fucking draft. Yeah. And he's falling here because he was upset that his quarterback was rancid ass last year at Missouri. Like, it's such a catch 22 for Luther. You know, you're upset because, okay, the guy who's playing quarterback is not playing in structure. He's never throwing me the ball. And he just keeps trying to run around like a goof. And that is affecting my livelihood. Like, I'm going to get drafted lower. I'm going to make less money. I'm going to have worse opportunities. So, of course, you're upset. But now guess what? Oh, you got upset because your quarterback's bad. Sounds like you're a team cancer, Luther Burden. So now your stock falls even further. Like, you're stuck in this vicious cycle. And good for the Bears, obviously, that this guy fell as far as he did. But, God, him and you've been sending me the updates on Will Johnson. We've seen how good James Pierce has been for the Falcons against everybody but J.C. Latham, which you texted me that he got neutralized by J.C. Latham, but I was like, if you remember, that's why I like J.C. Latham. He neutralized James Pierce.
I will say this about James Pierce, just to have an aside. If you watch Cam Ward's first big completion in that game, my main concern about James Pierce, besides any off the field stuff, is that I think he sometimes freelances a little too much in pursuit of the sack, and loses contain really easily. And if you watch that Cam Ward scramble, like, Pierce immediately like cuts way too far inside to try to and gets easily, like, Latham barely has to block him. He just kind of pushes him completely, and he takes himself entirely out of the play. And that allowed Cam Ward to easily escape the pocket and make that completion. That is my one concern with James Pierce, and I see that quite a bit in his game. And it's what makes him sometimes a negative against the run and gets him out of position is I do think he freelances a little bit and gets greedy in terms of pass rushing, and I do think he cheats inside and things like that a little too often. It's great when it works, you know, and his speed and everything makes him very dangerous, but that is the one concern I really have about him as a pro, is that he might sell out a little too easily sometimes.
I think that's why he has trouble with a guy like Latham. A guy like Darnell Wright would be the same thing. These linemen who kind of make you come to them, and rather than trying to go like mano-a-mano, strength against strength, like this is a war in the trenches, more of a like, I'm gonna like more of a judo sense to it. Like, I'm going to let you use your momentum, but I'm going to kind of push you way too far away from where you're going.
Ride you. Yeah.
Yeah. So just let you get yourself out of the play. That's definitely the kind of tackle that is going to cause James Pierce the most trouble in the NFL.
Yeah. Well, can he play with discipline is the question.
Yep.
Anyways, that was crazy aside, but yeah.
It. Anytime you want to talk about James Pierce, I'm happy.
Yeah. Luther Burden, Will Johnson, you know, the Will Johnson one, I will forgive a little bit just because the surgeries he's had, I guess, are very, like, most of the medical guys I've talked to about Will Johnson are like, yeah, I don't blame any NFL team for being scared of that medical history. It's kind of a question of when, not if he breaks down. But Emeka Egbuka, I guess he went 19th, which wasn't that bad, but like, I still, Emeka Egbuka, Luther Burden, James Pierce, guys that I really feel like people overthought in this draft for sure.
Yeah, I like Egbuka. I feel like he was just kind of overlooked every year he was eligible.
Yeah, because I mean, he was never the best wide receiver on his college team, which can sometimes be damning. But when you go to fucking Ohio State, it's not.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Okay, Ohio State, Alabama, like, it's fine. Yeah. You know, you're forgiven.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That was actually just last night, I was just like, how the fuck? And Luther Burden, even like with the personality concerns and all that, like, I could understand him falling to round two in the 2024 NFL draft when there were so many wide receivers.
Sure.
That I had a first round grade on that I was like, fine, if you have any question about any of these guys, like A.D. Mitchell, you know, if you have any question about any of these guys, sure, let them fall to the second round because there's eight other guys you could take in round one who would be quality. But in this draft, when you've got fucking Tyler Booker going 12th overall or whatever it was, like, you're going to let Luther Burden fall to 39. I'll never understand it.
Yeah. This draft should have been the draft to bet on talent and say, fuck it on everything else. Like,
yeah.
God, if I know that talent wise, this guy is going to be an NFL starter, there are maybe 10 of those in this draft we just had. And somehow four of them fell outside the top 10, which is preposterous. You just reminded me of Tyler Booker going at 12. Like, that's the Luke Newman spot, you know, where you would expect, like, we're just going to take a guard, a solid college guard in the middle rounds, and you know, he'll be okay for us for years and years. And they took him at 12. That's just the kind of draft this was.
Yeah. I guess I will also, I'll give Tyson Bajan his flowers.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we were a little harsh on him last week, but I thought that was the best game I have seen Tyson play, and he made a couple really good plays to avoid the rush. One of them, I do think, sadly, the play that got overturned, I think that's a play where the lack of arm strength really shows up a little bit, because that wasn't, I don't even know, it was like a full 10 yards in the air, and he wasn't able to get it that far without setting his feet. But the touchdown pass to Tyler Scott was a really beautiful ball. The heads up scramble play where he then dumped, you know, managed to actually make a throw there. That was a really good play. I thought Tyson looked smart, looked good. I actually, at one point I was like, in the third quarter, I was like, why is he still in the game? Can we get Austin Reed in here? And I found myself thinking, like, I don't want Tyson Bajan to get hurt behind the third string offensive line. So what a world we're in there.
What just looking like a quality backup quarterback.
Yes,
like,
yeah,
it's a nice option to come in.
Like, you said last week, it sucks that people can't be normal about the kid because he is a good story. And I do think he's a quality backup. But there is a clear hard ceiling there with that arm strength. But yeah, I mean, he looked great otherwise, and, you know, definitely knows when all else fails, look for Luther Burden because he's going to have 8 yards of separation against whatever poor backup he's facing.
No kidding.
Anybody else you wanted to talk about on the second string? Because I do, knock on wood, I've heard that his injury is not serious. I thought Austin Booker, again, just absolutely dominated. And if you want a positive comp there, like, Bryce Huff, when he was with the Jets, he was always their, like, backup DE. He was always going against backups in the preseason, but he was always terrorizing backup tackles, and that's kind of when the Jets knew they had a player there. Now, obviously, he disappointed when he got his money last year, but still, that's, you know, if Austin Booker is taking a step towards being, what, you know, like Bryce, Huff was with the Jets, that would be huge. And again, he completely dominated and won very quickly.
Yeah, you'll notice I said his full name. I feel like he's looked good enough to
there you
be
go,
like,
yeah.
this is a Chicago Bear now. This is a guy I have to think about. He just sometimes, he just takes the whole play into his hands and just destroys it single-handedly. Yeah, again, against the second string, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like I said, if you have a guy who wants to be a starter and he's going up against NFL backups, you want to see instant domination. And he's delivered that. I mean, he's the highest rated edge in all of football in this preseason by PFF. So that's something, hopefully.
Oh, yeah.
Also, speaking of guys being overmatched, poor Andrew Billings, that he has, for through no fault of his own, just through the addition of Grady Jarrett and the continued development of Jervon Dexter, he's now considered a backup defensive tackle on this roster and was playing against the poor hapless Bills second and third stringers. And oh my God, that sack he had was hilarious.
Just very unfortunate.
Completely overmatched. Poor, I felt terrible for the poor Buffalo Bill who's going to have to watch that in the film room today. It was not fair to do that to him.
The Bills interior just like Googling, like, wait, where? What's the PFF rating of this guy?
Yeah,
like, he's like the 10th, top 10 interior defensive line. Like, why is he playing in the third quarter of the second preseason game? And it's because, Jervon Dexter is a fucking freak of nature, and Grady Jarrett's not going to play too many snaps. So,
I guess, other than left tackle, the one concern I have left really to talk about coming out of this game is the depth at running back. Because
they all disappeared. Swift. We just
they
didn't
had,
play.
They held Swift out. For obvious reasons. Kyle Monongai, apparently, what tells me right now is Kyle Monongai is RB2 because he was held out of that game. But Roshan Johnson, again, is missing in action. Another injury is keeping him off the field. That's right now the biggest problem with his NFL career. The dude just cannot stay healthy. Deion Hankins got the start and got injured. Ian Wheeler, he's a good story. Everybody loved him on Hard Knocks. I'm glad he managed to come back from his ACL injury, but I don't really think there's an NFL caliber running back there. Do you think the Bears need to make a move at running back?
I think that's the easiest thing for the Bears to do at this point, right? It's the easiest thing to make an actually reasonable trade, like maybe not a reasonable trade, but a trade that could happen. You know, you can send, like, if you send a fourth round pick to a team for a running back they don't need, that better be a good running back, right, in this market in the NFL. And the Bears we just don't have one. Like, even with Monongai, like, God, guys, if you are looking for Kyle Monongai to be the answer at running back, I have some bad fucking news for
you.
Yeah,
I think he could be a quality goal line back, but I don't even think, like, he's going to be the between the 20s, like, Thunder to Swift's Lightning. They need, you know... One name that's been thrown around because he is on the block right now for the Commanders is Brian Robinson. I don't know that I don't think I'd give up a fourth for that guy, but I would consider a fifth or a sixth potentially for Brian Robinson. What about you?
I mean, the sad thing is if he came in, I'd be like, yeah, that should be the starter. Like, that should be our RB1 for sure, Brian Robinson. Like, with no question, because we already know how Ben Johnson feels about DeAndre Swift. Like, we understand that there are requirements to getting DeAndre Swift going, and that Ben just doesn't like them. He doesn't like that the dude is always going to hesitate to hit whatever seam that Ben has opened up for him. Like I said, after that, you're getting into, you know, Roshan just hasn't proven that he's a good running back at the actual running part, at the actual taking the handoff and making something happen part. Pass protection, sure. Receiving the ball, totally acceptable. Kyle Monongai is a short yardage power back guy. And God, you better not want anything else out of that dude. He might end up starting because, again, he's the kind of running back that Ben might like. You just hand him the ball. He runs through the fucking hole that Ben opened up for him. And that's it. And that might do it for him. But yeah, I mean, Brian Robinson's going to be that, but better. So maybe, I mean, if he is out there for a fifth round pick, I think you do it. I just think you jump on it. Like, that really does feel like the missing skill position piece at this point. I wouldn't change wide receiver. I wouldn't change tight end. I like our offensive line as long as Braxton feels better. It's just this running back thing. It feels like if you're going to match up the play to whatever running back you have, it's just such a tell for whatever you're going to do on that given play So you're going to have guys in there doing shit they're not good at some of the time, just so you're not telling on yourself. Right. And that's just not, it's a Sophie's choice. Do I keep DeAndre Swift in the game when I want to run between the tackles so they don't know I'm going to do that? Or do I bring in Monongai on, you know, third and two, even though they know where this fucking play is going, sort of deal?
Yeah, I think the other concern I guess I have is if you do trade for Brian Robinson, who's obviously holding up because he wants a contract, I don't know that I'd want to extend him. So then I don't know that he would want to come here.
Yeah.
So that's a question to have too. Although I guess if you're Brian Robinson, you kind of got to consider what leverage you probably don't have then. So
I don't dislike what we did in the draft, but boy, that Shamar pick could have been a running back of some kind, you know. Yeah. That's all I'm gonna say. I have to give that guy a chance to do something before I just completely bury it.
I just have trust in this interior offensive line that they've upgraded, and Ben Johnson's ability to design a run game, regardless. So I can't blame the Bears at all for understanding positional value. So.
Yeah. Do you think David Montgomery is available?
I'm going to say probably not.
Too bad. All right. Well, that's all I had. I mean, this is our second pod in 3 days, 3.5 days.
That's true. I'm kind of fucking sick of you and your goddamn.
Yeah, you're sick of me. That's what my text inbox says. You're just fucking tired of my presence, Kyle.
You and your goddamn Mentos or whatever it is you're chewing on the...
They're chewy sweet tarts.
Chewy sweet tarts.
Yeah, I fucking love them, but they hurt my tummy, so I only eat a couple of them every once in a while, but I can't stop, man, when I've got them in my hands. So next week, I'm thinking it's probably time to bring Nick out. We're going to do some chatting about the NFC North.
Is it? All right.
Yeah, we got to do a preview.
I don't want to bring Nick back on because, like...
He fucking owned us last year.
Yeah, he really did. When he was just like,
he was so right.
He was so right about the wide receiver core. I don't even. God.
He said some things that Nick said last year. One thing: this Bears team feels like it has a lot of top end talent, but they're like one bad thing happening away from complete collapse. So of course, one Hail Mary later, the entire season falls apart. Thanks for that. He also said the Cowboys would be the most disappointing team in the NFL. He was on a roll last year.
Yeah, well, and he was talking about our wide receiver core, and he was just like, I mean, not, you know, like, if Keenan Allen has lost a step, though, isn't it, like, your wide receiver core is DJ Moore and a rookie, and rookies tend to rookie, so maybe it's not that good. And we were like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, we literally said, shut the fuck up.
God damn it, Diona. Yeah, so I don't know that I want to bring Nick. I don't want him to harsh our vibe, you know. So
we'll see. Maybe he'll come on and he'll be like, Bears seem threatening this year. Maybe. Yeah, we can only hope.
Hope he's afraid.
That's right.
All right. Way out on that bumper's road. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago, and people I show do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.